The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good morning to all of you here at IMC, and warm greetings to those of you who are participating online, YouTube. It's nice that Nice that the people online are part of this community, and that kind of the sense of who we are practicing together, meditating, it's inclusive of such a bigger circle of people than it used to be when we just the people here. So thank you. So one of the very interesting and important topics for people who do this practice is to consider what the source is within you for what animates you. Or to say it maybe in simpler terms, what are the motivations, what is the sensibilities from which you act in the world, you live your life? Sometimes I like the idea of where do you take up residence? Where do you live? What's the reference point for your values, for how you speak, for how you live your life? And in Buddhism, one of the powerful words we have is dharma. And one of the nice things about the word dharma is that it's a word which is not limited to Buddhism. Kind of all Indian, as far as I know, almost all Indian religions and Indian culture has this very strong reference to this term dharma, which is not limited to just the Buddhist dharma. So and I think in India, I wouldn't be surprised if the word dharma encompasses the kind of some of the overlaps or some of the span of what the English word spiritual might be, where spiritual isn't limited to just Buddhism or Christianity or something, but spiritual is something that people in different religions all can kind of find some commonality or some resonance. So to take up residence in the Dharma, or have the Dharma be the source of what animates us, or this reference point for how we live our lives, it involves a paradigm shift, a very radical reorientation of our life from where we usually live. And where do we usually live? And I don't want to speak for any of you, per se, But some of the common places people live is some people live in their fear. Their anxiety and fear is kind of the place where they have kind of taken up residency, though they never assume that they've chosen that residency. But in fact, so much of who they are that it animates them. It directs their thinking, their speech, how they behave in the world. For some people, it's their desires. And their desires, what they want, is so important. It's kind of like that's the reference point, the orientation for everything is their desires. And other people, their reference point, their residency, is their aversion, what they don't want. Other people, it's their confusion, their uncertainty, they're kind of grasping, trying to figure out what in the world is going on here in this world. And what am I supposed to do? And somehow that's the center of gravity. For some people, it's conceit. Some strong sense of, this is who I am. A role, a quality, a characteristic, something. And part of the difficulty with conceit is that it's often animated by some of these other qualities, fear, desire, aversion, confusion. And that's what makes conceit sometimes problematic, when these others come in and make it much more complicated than it needs to be. And all of these ways of being, taking up residence, are limited residences. They involve a kind of, everyone's going to have a different way of feeling the difficulty of them or the shortcomings of them. I like very much the language of constriction. They're all constricting. They limit how much we're constricted by it or limited by it. And one way where they're constricted and limited is that it constricts the range, the span of what we take in, what we include as part of our lived experience. If it's fear that is the residence, we're oriented, some people, in it around more than anything else, maybe things that are threatening or potentially threatening. If it's desire, it's the things that we want, and we're kind of searching and looking for, you know, what we want. And we come to IMC and for a Sunday morning talk, and like, where's the best seat? I want to sit in the nice seat, that seat where I sat before, you know, that's what I want. Someone else comes and it's like, I don't want to, you know, let me sit in the right place. I don't want that place, I don't want that place, and by default, I'm only left for this one. And so we don't see the situation in a broad, filled with potential, filled with all kinds of other range of orientations to understand it. The perspective has gotten narrow. And in that narrowness, in that constriction, sometimes how we respond to the world around us is, we call in English, we talk about being reactive. So something strikes us deep enough or impacts us or makes an impression deeply on us, and it strikes one of these residencies that I'm talking about. Those residencies will become reactive, will become upset or activated in some strong way, sometimes so that we act impulsively. So, fear, desire, aversion, confusion can lead to all kinds of behavior. People who are afraid can act very, very impulsively sometimes. And some people who are take up residency in how they're hurt, how they've been treated poorly or badly, and that's what they're oriented around. If somebody comes from the outside and touches that limited residence, that limited point of view in which we operate for, it's very easy. We want to protect ourselves, or we want to assert ourselves, or we want to, we want to have blame, or we want to fix or something. And of course, some of that can be healthy and appropriate. But if that's the orientation, the reactivity in that kind of way, it continues to restrict or constrict the range of how we see what we take in from the environment, and it also constricts and limits the range of how we experience ourselves. The more reactive we are, the less we're in touch with the range of our humanity, the range of who we are and how we feel. If we're living with anger or resentment all the time, then it's possible that there's no room for our capacity for goodwill or love or friendliness. If we're living with desire as the primary orientation and then react to being frustrated desire, maybe there's very little room for feeling, having generosity or tuning into people so we feel like we want to be generous to them, because the orientation is where we take up residency is in this desire and the reactivity of it. And sometimes the reactive mode, or we reacted to, becomes so strong that it's the reactivity that somehow has been set in motion that becomes the place of residence, where we take up, where we live from. And what I'd like to propose is that living out of reactivity, living out of these residencies of anxiety and desire and aversion and confusion are places of heightened mental activity. They're places of alertness, of alarm that I associate with kind of living a life that's more on the surface. And so it doesn't allow us to kind of drop below that surface to experience something that's deeper within us, which I associate with the Dharma. If we're going to take up residency in the Dharma, some of you might not care for the metaphor of going deep. Another metaphor is that an unrestricted, unconstricted way of being. That the Dharma is the way, is how to have all kind of a wide open heart, a wide open sensibility that is not limited in these ways, but there's a kind of unlimited quality to attention, to awareness and how we are. And out of that Dharma, the life is not a reactive life. We could say it becomes a responsive life. Those distinctions are often used, and they're nice. But the language I like to introduce today is there's the reactive way of living, and then there's the emergent way. Because the Dharma is something that emerges within us, rather than something that gets triggered by events of the life, of the world around us. All kinds of things can happen to us, but when we live a Dharma life, we take up residency in the Dharma, in a sense, residency in the heart, residence in something deeper, where there's an arising of a response, an emerging of a response that has a very satisfying feeling, that it doesn't feel it necessarily has to do with conceit or me. It's a different residency. Taking up it and to live in that place, to live in that place of the Dharma, is to be available to something that is much broader, wider, deeper, fuller than any of the constricted residencies that people commonly live by. So the metaphor, one of the metaphors that I like to borrow from the Buddha for this idea of the emergence is that of a lake that's not being disturbed by rain coming in, not being disturbed by streams of rivers flowing into the lake, so there's no wind ruffling it. But there is an underwater spring in the middle of the lake that's bringing fresh water into the lake, and the fresh, refreshing water kind of spreads out like a fountain and spreads out throughout the whole lake, continually being renewed from the depths of the lake. And so this is a metaphor is used for the Buddha for what can happen when we're really absorbed in meditation, absorbed enough in this practice of meditation that the other residencies are not, we're not living there. We're not living in the places where the rain falls, where that agitates, where the water is agitated, or we don't have all these streams coming in that that somehow are muddying the water. So we're not operating from our reactivity, but we're allowing something deep inside to bubble up to and appear. The other metaphor that's also one of water that I like very much, the naturalness of all this, is when rain does fall on the side of the mountain, and there's enough rain, and the raindrops join together and create little trickles of stream of water going down the side of the hill, and then the trickles join together and become teeny little streams, and streams become creeks and brooks and the kind of and rivers, and eventually you have something large that's coming and just keeps flowing down. The naturalness is that it keeps flowing down, it keeps flowing. And sometimes if it comes to a lake and the lake is not full, it takes time to fill the lake. But once the lake is full, it spills over the edge of the lake and down the mountain some more. If there's a big boulder, water will find a way around the boulder sooner or later, even if it has to fill up above it or something, go for the top. But the naturalness that the water just keeps flowing and joining and getting bigger and bigger until it comes down from the mountains onto the plains. And in India, for the Buddha, they had the Ganges plains, and maybe joins the Ganges and then goes out into the ocean. The Buddha uses this analogy to say that as we take up residency in the practice, in the Dharma, there is a natural unfolding and deepening or filling or expanding, flowing of our inner life that has a naturalness to it that's distinct from what we're any attempt we have to construct, to make, to want, to do. Dharma states, dharmic states that can arise. Things like even like mindfulness and joy and tranquility, happiness, equanimity. So all kinds of wonderful things that can kind of arise and flow. I associated with metta and karuna, mudita and upekkha, these goodwill and compassion and sympathetic joy and equanimity, that these also can arise from the bottom of the lake and surface and flow through us. And in fact, so these are the metaphors that the Buddha uses for this kind of emergence. And I think there's no Pali word, I think, that obviously is usually translated as emergence, but there's a lot of words the Buddha used for the arising, the appearing of these things, as opposed to the making of them, the naturalness in which these things arise. So one of the very interesting distinctions that the Buddha makes that points to this, a little bit to this distinction I'm making here between the reactive and the emergent, is some people call the distinction one between spiritual and non-spiritual, or spiritual and worldly. Some people translated it as carnal and non-carnal, which probably has very strong associations with certain Western ideas that maybe we don't want to borrow, be too associated with. But the literal meaning in the Pali is that the first one, sa-amisa, carnal or non-spiritual, worldly is it literally means of the flesh, so that's why carnal can kind of work. And the other is niramisa, which is literally means not of the flesh, so non-carnal. And how I understand it is the first, the non-spiritual, the carnal, the worldly, whatever way we want to translate, not of the flesh, is. It has to do with when experiences of the world touch us, and it's that place where we're triggered. So, particularly if the six, the five senses of eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch, that if something comes along and we get a nice massage and we feel the pleasure of it, that pleasure would be considered of the flesh. Kind of a worldly pleasure or a non-spiritual pleasure. Nothing wrong with that pleasure. Buddhism doesn't negate the value of it, but it's not. It's coming from the outside and stimulating our nerves. Kind of literally of the surface. The not of the flesh, this spiritual, is part of this. What it can emerge from deeper within, and is flowing. Of the spring that can come, and one of the primary associations that not of the flesh, this dharmic flow, is joy and happiness. But there's other qualities as well: confidence, peacefulness, brightness, sense of purity. All kinds of things we can feel from this place. Exactly how we should feel it and be with it, it depends on individuals and circumstances and time. What I associate it with is being available to the world, being available to ourselves, a kind of a capacity for attentiveness, for attention, that's not restricted, not being defined by the different residencies we take up that are not that limit us and constrict us. We have a preoccupation, we have a perspective that we always bring. But rather, the attention, the attentiveness is more open, available, without an agenda, without a lot of, hopefully, presuppositions, preconceived ideas, biased, but is developing this capacity to be centered and present so that we're not leaning ahead of ourselves into the future, into things, not pulling back, not closing down, but we're kind of opening up, relaxing into, settling into, taking up residency in a place that is kind of unlimited, that represents something deep, that where there's space for something to feel this life of ours in a deeper way. A place where there's space to allow some deeper motivation to animate our life, to guide our life, feel our life. And this is, you know, I associate this with the Dharma, to take up residency in the Dharma. And then to trust it, rather than trusting or having faith in the reactive places we can take up residency, the reactive places where, you know, desire exists or frustration exists, aversion exists. Not all forms of desire are problematic. It's a taking up residency with it. Not all forms of aversions are problematic. It's taking up residency so that it limits the scope of our attentiveness, our availability for this world, for being here. Well, the Buddha associates it with things like joy and happiness, these beautiful qualities. I think it's where it really gets tested and where I find it most powerful is when I'm uncomfortable, when things are challenging and difficult. To then be available to sit in this place where the emergence happens, where things can bubble up and appear, it's in a context that doesn't feel comfortable. And how to trust this place when we're uncomfortable. As opposed to when we're uncomfortable, it's very easy for the reactive, the fix-it, the blame, the like, something's wrong here, the judgments, the stories, the ideas, the impatience to be there. And then it can't be right, you know. This is supposed to be the Dharma world that I'm in. I'm supposed to be, it's supposed to be, you know, riding on the clouds and being good and feeling right and everything is fine. Occasionally that might happen, occasionally. But it's plenty of our life that is uncomfortable, the world we live in. That's where the trusting this place, this deeper place, the dharmic place, is really significant, really helpful. To take a residence for there, trust that more than the reactivity is an area of tremendous growth, tremendous challenge, because you'll probably find in yourself strong arguments, this can't be right. I can't just be here and be available for this. I have to, you know, be angry. I'm supposed to get something. I wanted that to have something else to happen. And there's strong pull into this, what I call the reactive world, or this back up into this place where things are more superficial, or the activated mind. The activated mind that is easily activated, reactivated over and over again. And the art of it, the practice of it, is to have discovered the dharmic dimension, the non-reacted place within, where the wellsprings, the naturalness of stuff, can exist even when we're uncomfortable. To stay in that and breathe with it, to take our time with it, to be available. I'm uncomfortable, but I can be available for now for this. Let's see what happens if I'm available, as opposed to rushing in with the reactivity. With it, you know, right now it needs to be different. This emergence, place where things emerge, doesn't mean that we're just sitting patient, sometimes with patience, and just waiting for something to happen. And you know, 5 minutes later, you know, the rice is burning on the stove because there's something wrong here, and I'm just going to be available and see what emerges. The emergent side of us can act quickly sometimes. It can act forcefully sometimes. But it's a very different place to live than, you know, this dharmic, this reactive place. So where do you take up residency? And I'm using this language, residency, today as an alternative to another way I could have talked about, which maybe is more confusing or more problematic sometimes, and that is, where do you create an identity? What do you identify with? This is who I am. And so rather than talking about that, and then you question, well, I'm supposed to be somebody, ain't I? You know, how can I not be anything? But where do you take up residency? Where do you live? And I like it because it also involves, even though it might be unconscious, some kind of choice that we've made. That maybe we can make a different choice. And being able to make a different choice becomes possible at some point, I hope, as we practice more and more, as we meditate or show up for our life with mindfulness and care and compassion, that we begin to get a stronger feeling. There is an knowing, a stronger knowing that there is an alternative way of living. There is an alternative way of showing up for the world that's not centered on conceit. We haven't taken up residency in this is who I am, and that everything has to kind of fit into my desires, or I have to fit into everything the world wants. And but it's taking up this place that is not you, but is found within you. I love this kind of language. That, so it's not something apart from you, but it's not you, but it's within you. It's something. So it's not the place. We don't take up residency in an identity. We don't take residency in claiming this is, you know, claiming something as mine. And that's one of the reasons I find it valuable to associate it with the Dharma. It's the Dharma. The Dharma knows. The Dharma is responding. The Dharma I can trust. Take refuge in this Dharma, so that we don't. I don't, you know, appropriate it for me, myself, and mine. But to be available. To be available in an unlimited way, and open to possibilities. Not constricted. Not coagulated. Not restricted, but a place where attentiveness, care, love, awareness kind of flows or is open or available, like a spring in a lake that might flow up, the fresh water might flow up into all the places where we're uncomfortable, all the places that are challenging. It actually can flow into the place where we are restricted, where we are identified and caught. But it's a wonderful and important part of Dharma practice is to discover this other residency not in opposition or as a complete substitute for the old residencies, but as a perspective with which now to begin investigating and seeing the reactivities we have, the places where we keep taking up residency or acting from that are not healthy and for anybody and everyone. So there's the reactive side of us and there's the emergent side of us. And as we do this practice, we begin to discover an alternative to the reactive mode of being, to discovering the emergent mode, what emerges from the Dharma, what emerges from the spiritual, from that which is not of the flesh, in a sense, that which is deeper within us, that flows like a spring in a mountain lake. So I hope this gives you something to think about. I hope you practice with something to investigate and look and see if there's these, if you can, if where in your life what I've talked about today, you can identify or see and discover. And maybe some point over the next week, you might have the occasion to be reactive to something, maybe. And then maybe, rather than brushing it off, it's good to be respect our reactivity, but maybe you can try to meet it in a different way. The emergent side, the available side, the place where there's a kind of open to being sensitive to what is this, can open and meet the places of reactivity in a new way. What's that like for you? What happens then? So, thank you. And we have a little bit of time. If some of you would like to ask a question, or comment about this, a testimonial or a reservation about it all, but anything.
I really enjoyed your talk. This is wonderful points to live by. I just wanted to mention that when you are in the grip of fear, which is seems at the time to be profound and engulfing, so forth, and you want to work your way out of that, in that particular respect. I found I had this problem last year over a period, and that the consequences were pretty serious over that period. And I find myself, when I just, instead of being in a grip of fear, I laid out a plan for myself, and that plan really helped me to get out of the fear and be more at peace with the issue and how to approach it, and an end point potentially for the issue that was at hand. And I found that to be useful. Just at the very minimum, just come up with a plan. Uh-huh. Be proactive about how do I deal with this.
Great, I love it. And now what I hear from that is that it's possible to step out far enough from fear, enough the grip of fear, and operate from a different place. And one of the different places is to sit down with a piece of paper and pen, maybe, and make a plan and consider what are the alternatives, what are the ways. You can't make a plan in the middle of the crisis, but maybe ahead of time you could think about some options and then to live with that plan. It sounds like a wonderfully wise way.
Thank you.
Sometimes in my life, when I've had some kind of personal challenge that really troubled me, how to step out of the reactive mind, how to not to have the usual way of thinking always be the way that we live in the world, is especially if the usual way of thinking is just like second nature. It's like, you know, it's like the fish doesn't see the water supposedly that they swim in. We don't necessarily see the thinking that we live in and don't really see what goes on. So when I've been troubled by something occasionally, what I've done is gone someplace where I was alone, like driving a car, and spoken out loud. And because I find that when I speak out loud, it's actually speaking from a different place within me than where I think from. And so there's access to different wisdom, different understanding, different perspectives, different attitudes, different care. It's different enough. But if I'm only thinking about things all the time in my thoughts, I'm actually limiting myself the scope and the range of how I can consider something. And so you might, some of you, if you ever find yourself troubled and want a new perspective, you might try find a place where you're alone. Or at least have, you know, earbuds that people think you're on the phone. And so this is kind of building on what you said, this ability to sit back and plan is also maybe calling on a different part of the brain, the mind, than just the usual, just letting things go, the thinking go along.
Great talk. Thank you so much. I'd never heard exactly those two words coupled, emergence and reactive.
You're a little bit closer.
Oh, is that better?
Yeah, good. My hair.
Okay. Right. Oh, thank you so much. It was such a beautiful talk, and I have never heard those two words coupled, emergent and reactive. So, and one thing I was thinking about just now about where a person takes up residence is I follow on YouTube, and so your talks last week about the different bodies, and I just wondered if it would be possible for you to speak about that a little bit again, particularly the karmic body. Uh-huh. And then the intersection between emergence, so the you that's not your identified you, but or identified self, and your residency, because I'm seeing that there's
great.
Like that's a real
great
something.
So I very much associated the karmic body or karmic activity as being the reactive, and the word karma means activity, action, or activity. And so it kind of works, you know, reactivity, you know, reaction. So it's the actions which reverberate or repeat themselves or come from some place that is karma is activity which our activity, our actions that we do. I like activity sometimes because it's not always so conscious. They're ones that leave a trace. The ones that trigger more things to occur and on and on. The emergent doesn't automatically require or trigger ongoing activity to be there. It can kind of exist without leaving a trace. And so last week when I talked about the four, five kinds of body, the last four were the emergent qualities of the body. And so... Yeah, so the second half of your question about more identity, who was that?
In a way you almost just answered it, but yeah, just like the intersection of, you said to try to be with it, you know, when you're uncomfortable, to not shut down or, you know, whatever, that wasn't your word, that's mine, but, how to sort of maybe note, or in so much as it's even possible to note your own residency, and how that is kind of maybe, did I understand you to say that your residency is like thwarting your emergence?
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I'm not sure. It's a great question. I'm not sure I have the good answer for you that deserves. But the one that I prefer is that all this becomes known as you keep practicing mindfulness. Just keep practicing mindfulness. Let your mindfulness become stronger and develop, and to develop a skill or capacity to be uncomfortable, to be comfortable. Some people have trouble feeling joy, whatever it might be. But be able to become familiar with yourself more and more, so you start seeing the places where maybe the inflection points between what brings stress and what brings the opposite of stress. And the more you do that, the more you'll start getting you'll start reading the book in your body of what's pointing towards the emergent and what points to the reactive. But it becomes, the real place is just keep studying yourself, being present and seeing and learning. To now, just because I talked about the emergent quality, and maybe in a nice way, so, okay, now that's what I'm going to do. probably that's, it's too easy for that to come from a reactive place or to take up residency doing that. I'm going to be the one who's going to be the emergent one. And just like, that's not it either. But this is something that begins to arise, to surface and become clear, and something we trust and something we rest in as we know ourselves better and better, and as we know the difference between these different modes. And so I'm using the modes of reactive and emergent today. Some people, another mode that's related is skillful and unskillful, wholesome and unwholesome. So there's all these different things, but the recipe is to understand yourself better. Is that okay? Great. Okay, well, thank you. So last few weeks I've been here. We've had a meeting out in the parking lot for those people who want to stay. It's been really lovely, and taking off the masks and just sitting in a circle and talking. Unfortunately, I can't stay today because I'm going to a retreat center. I have to be there early today to help set up for the retreat that starts today. You're welcome. I encourage those of you who want to do it today. Hillary will be there, and Hillary will facilitate some discussion and just sharing among yourselves. It's nice to hang out a little bit with each other. So if you want to bring up a folding chair and bring it out to the parking lot, that would be quite nice. And because I'm doing this retreat, I won't be here next week. Next week, a longtime IMC practitioner and person who does a lot of teaching here for us is Maria Strottmann will come and give a talk. And people love her talks when she comes here, so I think you're in good hands. And so thank you very much. And